This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hey, everybody. It's time again for an episode of 19 Cats and Counting. I am your host, cat behavior nurse Rita Reimers, here on Pet Life Radio. We have an awesome guest for you today, Bethany Shaw, Dr. Bethany Shaw. We're going to talk about something that we all have to face, and that is the death of our pets. We'll be right back after this message.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with 19 Cats and Counting, talking about a subject today that's, you know, it's very difficult to talk about. We're going to talk about losing our pets, because we all have to face that eventually. We want them to live forever, but unfortunately. And Dr. Bethany Shaw is here to talk about at-home euthanasia, which is really somewhat a new phenomenon, wouldn't you say, Dr. Shaw?
Yeah, definitely. I'll admit that when I graduated in 2010, it wasn't something that was really on my radar. And I was at a clinic that would do in-home euthanasia if the clients asked for it, but it wasn't something that was asked very often. And whenever they did, I was like, okay, sure, we can do that. I don't really understand this ask, but okay. But it wasn't until it was my own dog, to my shame, that all the lights went on for me.
No, I get it. It's different when it's your pet.
Yes. And she had developed osteosarcoma, which is bone cancer. And so the treatment for that is to amputate. And then we gave her chemo after the fact. But we really only got a couple more weeks with her. It's about two months. And so she was a tripod at that point and getting around.
One of those.
Yeah. So... And for cats, sometimes they manage a little easier. She was a mid-sized dog, so she was not used to needing to be lifted. Yeah, so it was a matter of dignity for her. But we also have kids. My husband and I have two kids who were pretty little at the time. And so when it was time to say goodbye to my Getty girl, we could go where she was already laying down. We didn't have to move her. And then our kids were able to be aware of what was happening and as engaged as they wanted to be.
Right.
Without, you know, me having to chase them down when they wanted to wander away and toddle off. So that's when I was like, oh my gosh, this is better for all of us.
Definitely. So your kids from a young age kind of get to understand the process before it's too traumatic for them, right?
Right. And for my children, that was their first real experience with the loss of a family member. I mean, I don't want to call it a training ground because it's not training. It's the real deal. But it's an introduction to grief and how to understand life. So, yeah, it's a very important moment for the whole family.
Were you able to, I know your husband's a veterinarian too. Were you guys able to do it yourselves? Or did you have somebody come do it for you?
He did it. I couldn't do it for myself. I'll be honest, my vet brain went out the window. I couldn't even say for sure when it was the right time, which it's so funny because we have a quality of life scale on our website to help like put this into a little bit more of an objective light.
Yeah, if you're wrestling with a decision and you're just not sure.
Of course. And so I was like, oh, babe, I don't know. He's like, well, why don't you do the quality of life scale? And I was like, duh, of course, that makes sense. And so he helped me. He was the vet and I was the pet parent. And he was the one who was able to actually provide the medications for her. And, wow. and I could just be mom. So
something you said there, really important. You didn't have to move her. A lot of pets, when they get to that stage of life, they're in pain, and moving them just causes a lot of not just emotional discomfort, but physical discomfort.
Yeah, physical discomfort, sometimes logistically not possible if you're talking about a large dog and a smaller frame human, but also just the anxiety of being moved. Why am I being moved? What's happening? And like you said, physical discomfort of it. So it really is a special thing that we can go where they've already chosen to be comfortable. And you're the behaviorist. You can speak to this more. But, you know, cats a lot of times will withdraw and they yes. want to kind of hide and be more secure. And so if we can go to where they already have chosen a place, sometimes that's a gift and a piece of maintaining their dignity and their personality, you know?
Definitely.
Honoring them.
I remember when my pumpkin kitty, he died at home. But, you know, he was 17. And I just could tell something was different, right? And he would go lay down someplace and I'd go over, like, what's going on with you? And he'd look at me like, I'm trying to die. Go away. I was going to take him in the morning, but he found himself a spot and I stopped going in to check on him because every time I went in, he looked at me like, you're interrupting my process.
Oh.
So he did pass and it was peaceful. But I've had others, you know, that I've taken into the vet's office. And it's, I didn't know you guys covered my area. Let my listeners know I live in a very small town in South Carolina, Lancaster. I don't say it right, Lancaster. That's how they say it down here. I'm from up north. We have one vet in town and he's awesome. I mean, the office, there's like four vets in it, but the medical director is my vet. But it's still full of anxiety. Am I doing the right thing? Have I made the right decision?
Yeah.
Tell me about that scale. Where can people find that on your website?
It's on our website. So codapet.com/ and then it's quality-of-life-scale.
Awesome. Can you tell me a little bit about what is evaluated in that scale?
Yeah. So we're looking at the, you know, eating, drinking, mobility, things that the pet still enjoys doing. And so they're simple questions that you can then answer and it'll translate into a scale. What I find to be most useful about it is it can be repeated. So if you have a pet who's getting aged and, you know, starting to maybe show some signs of quality of life changes, you can repeat, take it, and then map their progress.
Oh, so they're not, if you take it and they're not quite ready yet, you can take it later when maybe some of the things have changed about their demeanor.
Absolutely. Or even, you know, my memory doesn't extend past last week sometimes. So if I'm trying to see the forest for the trees and take a step back, I can forget like, oh yeah, this has changed a lot over the last month. Or no, actually things are kind of leveling out right now. We're in a good place. And it can also be, the results can be shared with other family members or with your veterinarian. So then
awesome.
they're aware of kind of what changes are happening and that sort of thing.
I love that. I wish I'd known about that. My boo-boo, he's okay now, but he was really close to death for a little while. He pulled through because my vet's so freaking awesome. I love him so much. But that's good to know that's out there because, I mean, he's 17. I have a lot of older cats and he's frail. He's put some weight back on and he's doing well. But, you know, another year or two, maybe.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I have a 20-year-old cat. Nothing wrong with her. She still does Zoomies and she looks younger than all of them.
I love it.
So you just never know with a cat, right? And things can change on a dime.
Yes. Well, and, you know, they're all individuals and just like us, you know, some of us are blessed with better genes than others. And, you know, obviously, some of our pets come to us not as young in the process and we don't always know kind of what their beginning stages had looked like and that sort of thing too. Another thing that I found helpful, unfortunately, was after the fact with my girl. I had taken photos, you know, right up to the end, and it wasn't until about a year later when I looked back at those photos.
Yes, I've been there.
That I was surprised to see what she really looked like, because in my head, I was looking through my heart, right? I saw who she was for all those years prior, but I didn't see how she really was looking at the end. So it can be difficult to do, but I think, you know, taking a photo once a week and then kind of putting together a little folder where you can scroll back and look at physically any changes that you're seeing in your cat or your dog, it would have been helpful to me at that time to reassure myself that, yes, I was at the right place and doing the right thing.
I have like 24,000 photos in here. That's my boo-boo, by the way, the one that almost passed away.
He's
a little more frail than that now. But I love that you said that, because it's sort of like when you're losing weight. I used to work for Richard Simmons, so I equate a lot of things to that. You do it so gradually, you don't see it. Somebody else will see it because they haven't seen you in a while. It's the same with your animals when they get sick. It happens, you know, the weight loss and the changes in their physical makeup happen so gradually. You don't notice it until you, like you said, look back on an old photo. I looked back on some really old photos of Boo Boo. I'm like, oh my gosh, she looks like a whole different cat, right?
Yeah. Yep.
It's sad. Yep. This is a good time for us to take a quick break. Let's come back and talk a little more about that. And then I want to talk about your company, how you started it and why you started it. We'll be right back after this message.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem. But the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back again with 19 Cats and Counting. I am your host, cat behaviorist Rita Reimers. I am certified. Visit RitaReimers.com if you need any behavior advice. I have lots of free stuff out there. But right now we're talking to Dr. Bethany Shaw, and I'm saying it right, yay, about CodaPet, CodaPet.com, and at-home euthanasia, which I think, I won't say if, when I have to face another challenge like that, I think I will definitely opt for that. So we were talking about noticing the changes in your pet along the way as maybe their illnesses are progressing or just as they age.
Yeah, I think that it's always helpful to have an objective view, because we can get so wrapped up in, uncertainty.
Uh-huh.
I'll say a lot of times in the in-home euthanasia side, when I'm meeting a family and I ask, do you have any questions for me? Inevitably, the question is, I want to know I'm doing the right thing.
Sure.
And a majority of the time, the pet is in this window of time where this is an appropriate choice. Now, is it today? Is it tomorrow? Is it next week? That's between the family and the pet, right?
Right, right.
But us vets, we have a window where this is an appropriate, you know, way to move forward. We were talking earlier about how every pet is different. Every family is different. And so your goals for this pet may be that you want to preserve their dignity in a certain way, because dignity to them looks different than dignity to your other cat, or, you know, what the goals of the family in terms of, sometimes we have son or daughter away at college and we're trying to get them to spring break.
so that the child can come home and, you know, participate in that goodbye.
As long as the animal's not suffering, you can do that.
Correct. And there's a lot we can do for hospice, you know, palliation. There's a lot that can be done in the vet world to help keep the pet as comfortable as
like
possible.
Like palliative care.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just went through that with my dad last year, so I didn't even know that word until last year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I should just share palliation or palliative care is when you're no longer trying to fix the problem, you're not trying to cure a disease, but you're just trying to keep the patient as comfortable as possible, improve their quality of life for as long as possible. And again, those goals are going to be different, right? What is an acceptable level of, you know, decline in terms of, is the pet able to get around and feed themselves? Are they able to groom themselves still? And for some cats, that's not a big deal. For other cats, they're very fastidious and yes, that matters so much.
I have a few that if they're not grooming, I know they're not feeling well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think we get hung up on the idea of binary. Yes, it's the right time. No, it's not the right time. But it's such a fine line. It's such a personalized person-to-person, pet-to-pet thing that I think it's really important to think about these things ahead of time. If you are a home where there's multiple people involved.
Oh, I'm the only person, but 16 cats. And they do grieve each other.
Yes, absolutely. When there's multiple people involved, then having those conversations with each other.
Yes, yes.
So important.
This one person might be ready to let go and the other person's not quite there.
Right. And if you can't articulate that, then it's hard and that brings more tension into the home and into the
definitely,
family, right?
Definitely.
So if you're able to kind of, as painful as it is, start to unpack, why am I not ready? What is it that would be ready? Am I waiting because I don't think that it's their time? Am I feeling like they're not ready to go? Or am I feeling like I'm not ready to go? What would help me? Do we need to plan a senior photo shoot or, you know, something to memorialize or a celebration of the greatest, best day with all the wonderful treats and activities and, you know, those sorts of things.
I love that you said that about a photo shoot. I had a photographer on the show sometime the year before last, I think. And that's what she did when the pet parents were deciding it was probably time. She would go and do a last photo shoot.
Yeah.
Really gave the pet parents a lot of peace.
Yes. And it's such a gift because you can never go back in time, right? So photos in general, whether it's a senior photo shoot or just, I love doing annual family photos because my kids grow so quickly.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I wanted to go back to what you were mentioning about the cats grieving each other.
Yes.
That is such a huge piece for me about why being able to say goodbye in home is a real gift. With cats particularly, I know there's the fashions, right? Like these guys are besties and they don't like this one.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. You leap here. You sound like you're describing and it changes sometimes.
Right. But they do want to know what's happening. They want to know who's where and how they're doing and all those sorts of things. And so when we say goodbye to a family member, a pet at home, even if the cats weren't friends, so to speak, or the other household pets didn't really seem to care about them. They coexisted but didn't show interest. I still want to invite the pet parents to bring those pets around so that they can see what has happened and they can say their goodbyes and not then be seeking for their friend after the fact or their frenemy, whoever it is.
No, because any change in the household, you know,
yeah,
will
absolutely
impact, especially if you've got more than one, especially if you've got 16. Back when I lived in LA and I only had 7 cats at one point, and I wrote my book about, I told you about my heart cat, Sadie's mm-hmm. heart. She died of ventral septal defect.
Yeah.
Well, she, I was a cat sitter at the time too. I went out to do my cat sits and I came back and she had died on the sofa. She was really bonded to my trouble. So they must have been together. He was in the closet hiding.
Yeah.
But that night, after I took her, you know, to do what we had to do, every cat went and sat on that spot for a little while. like honoring that Sadie was gone. She was kind of the head female, right? She was the alpha girl.
That gave me chills. It's like, it's important to give them that opportunity to grieve too, which looks different, you know, from cat to cat or from, you know, even dog to dog. It looks different for each individual. And
right.
It's not necessarily what we even recognize as grief or honoring, but to let them have that opportunity is so important.
Oh, I felt so bad for my parents' dogs. My parents, my listeners know, they passed away 5 weeks apart last year, October, November.
So sorry.
My parents had 4 dogs left. And then the littlest one, he had to be put down. He had some kind of tumor behind his eye. It was starting to bulge out. So this poor dogs, this other 3, they went through losing my mom, losing my dad, losing their home, losing their buddy. It was just a lot of grief for them. And I could tell it made a difference in their personalities. Luckily, because my mom was in the rescue world, I had a rescue here that helped me place the dogs in other homes. And they actually got placed separately, which I think might have been good for them because all the changes, they were starting to do some infighting. So the same with the cats. When there's a change like that, even if you didn't think they were bunnies, you might see some hierarchy changes, some friendship shifts along the way.
Yep.
But I think if they see it happen at home and the pet just doesn't suddenly, where to go? It's gone.
Right.
It makes it a little bit easier on them.
It brings closure for sure in ways that we can't really give it to them if the pet is removed from the home prior.
Yeah. They passing. Look for each other. I've seen that at times when I've had to do it that way. So let me ask you, how did you get involved in this? Is your whole practice just this now?
Yeah. So we started, there's 3 of us veterinarians who got together and formed Coda Pet. I'm doing Coda Pet exclusively. And the 3 of us, it's myself, my husband, Dr. Gary, and then Dr. Karen Wayla is our 3rd veterinary co-founder. Karen was doing in-home euthanasia in our area. And I hadn't met her before I kind of got started on this journey. I was mentioning earlier before we were recording that when I graduated from vet school, I was aware of in-home euthanasia because occasionally we would have folks ask for it. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, I can provide that. It's kind of an interesting...
It was weird before it took off, yeah.
Yeah, and this was, you know, early 2010s, so I was comfortable with the process, but didn't quite get it until it was my own dog. She was my junior surgery dog, so for those outside the vet world, in your junior year, you do spays and neuters, and usually they're adoptable pets with a rescue or a shelter that need to be fixed before being adopted out, and so... We do the spay and neuter, and then we get first crack at adopting them.
Oh, nice. I had no idea. That's so cool.
Yeah, at least that's the way that it was at the school that I was at. And so I adopted Serengeti. She was my first dog that I brought into my life as an adult, start to finish, all my choices, you know, my girl.
Yeah, so, the first one's always special.
Oh, yeah. So she's, as they say, my heart dog. And fast forward a number of years, she developed osteosarcoma, bone cancer. And the treatment for that sounds terrible, but the treatment is to amputate the limb and then chemotherapy. We did what we could for her. We really only get a couple months with osteosarcoma right now. By the time of diagnosis, there's usually metastases. So that was the case with her. We only got a couple months, but when it was time to say goodbye, we were able to go where she was already comfortably laying down. We have 2 young kids who were even littler at the time, and they were able to be as involved in that process and aware of it as they wanted to, but had the freedom to toddle off and wander away without me having to disengage and keep them from opening drawers and cabinets or whatever they might be getting into otherwise, because we were at home. So at that point, I was like, I want other families to have access to this kind of a goodbye for their pets, not have to be a vet themselves or be married to one, or for their clinic schedule to line up with when they need the service. If it does, then that's amazing, you know, especially if there's an ongoing relationship with a vet, then that's fantastic.
Well, I know there's a vet shortage right now, so a lot of vets can't take the time out of their practice. Everybody knows sweet teddy bear, say hi.
Hi, teddy bear.
A lot of times the clinic schedule is booked out for a couple weeks, and so it's just not feasible, right? So I reached out to Karen at that point. I introduced myself and I said, hey, do you need help? And she said, yes. So we got together and we formed Coda Pet, Coda being the tail end of a musical movement or a piece. And yeah, now we're coast to coast. We've got 175 vets with us right now.
And, even sort of my little town, which is I was amazed to see.
Yeah. So it's really an honor to be able to help people in that time.
Sure.
To be invited into somebody's home. I mean, that's their sanctuary, right? To be invited into their space at such an intimate and tender moment in their journey with that pet.
Sure.
I mean, it really is an honor. And I'm always so humbled to have that opportunity.
I'm sure that next time I will definitely be visiting your website. I already saw there's two vets in my area that do it. So it doesn't hurt. If you live in a small town and you're just, they probably don't do my area, check it out, because you just don't know. I'm 30 miles south of a major city. So that's probably why cover my area. But we were talking before we started recording, a lot of the situations with people, you know, if you've got a large German Shepherd or something like that, you know, how are you going to get a sick dog of that size to the vet? And even a small cat or other type of animal, they might have pain, right? And picking them up and jostling them around just causes them a lot of discomfort as well as, you know, anguish. So it's just more peaceful for the pet as well as the people.
Yeah, it helps to reduce anxiety for sure. You can't tell them, hey, look, this is the plan. This is what we're doing. So to be able to provide as comfortable of a space, which what's more comfortable than where they choose to be? And then they really pick up on our anxiety, right?
They do.
So if you're anxious about, oh, I got to get them into the car, we got to drive across town, they're worried and I'm worried, and you guys kind of start spinning each other up, right? That can be really difficult. So I think that anything that we can do to keep both pet parent and pet as calm as possible is going to help the situation. And then we also avoid the painful return home without the pet scenario.
That's always the worst. Like I mentioned off the air, my vet, he always walks me out the back, tells me to pay later, you know, because he knows. He does that. I'm sure he does that with all the pet parents. It's a hard decision. You know, making the decision is hard right there.
Yeah, it's so hard. And I always kind of think of it to myself as the walk of shame. Not that there is anything to be ashamed of.
I get it, though.
But we feel that shame of like, oh, I failed them somehow, or, you know, this was a lack of a success because I had to say goodbye. And I don't think that that's how death is, you know?
No.
I think that we don't do a very good job in our culture of thinking about death and talking about it in advance and looking at it as, yes, it's an inevitability. So let's talk about what matters to me. What would failure be? What would that look like? Because this is, it's not a failure. It's the next phase, and we all are going to face it someday.
Yeah, it's the best thing you can do for a pet who's suffering is to let them go in peace. You know, it's not make them suffer.
Yeah.
So, any last words of wisdom for all of our listeners out here?
I would just harp on that, thinking about the end of life ahead of time. If there are multiple caregivers involved, discussing that ahead of time. What does it look like for this particular pet to be suffering? Is it a pet who loves certain activities? You know, we were mentioning cats who groom themselves and are very fastidious. So is this cat not being able to groom themselves a sign that we're one more step into this process? Or, you know, what does it look like? So having those conversations ahead of time when the emotions are running lower. It's not
when they're not raw.
Yeah. Right. Not as raw, and that your hand isn't as forced, because sometimes we put off these conversations and we put off these thought exercises until we really have no choice and the pet is actively dying. We need That's to true. Either intervene or, you know, come to peace with it very quickly. So yeah, being able to at the lowest stakes time have those conversations and thoughts. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you have to seal it in stone and go by this plan come hell or high water. It's just, let's think about it ahead of time so we're at least prepared.
And on the same page, because if you've mm-hmm. got one person saying it's time and the other person saying it's not, that can be, you know, that can be painful for everyone and for the animal too. The most important thing is that you don't let your pet suffer, I think. Well, thank you so much. I really love that you came on the show. I love that you started this business. I had no idea that you were out there. Now I do. So visit codapet.com. You know, get familiar with the process before you need it, right? Get comfortable with it, because it's a fact of life. If you have a pet, you're eventually going to have to say goodbye, sadly. So thank you so much. Anytime you want to come back on, you know, the door is always open.
Thank you.
And I have to thank, of course, Mark Winter for giving me this awesome spot on Pet Life Radio. Thank you so much. And all my listeners, too. I'm glad you waited for me. There was a little time I didn't do some podcasts because of my loss last year. Everybody who listens knows that. I really appreciate it. And don't forget, though, that every day is Catter Day. We'll talk to you next time.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.